Hello, welcome to the Wednesday, September 30th, 2015 edition of the Sands Internet Storm Center's Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich, and today I'm recording from Baltimore, Maryland. For the reverse engineers among our listeners, we do have a diary by Petro today about how to reverse engineer DLLs. DLLs are a little bit more tricky than regular executables because if they are packed, it's not that easy to get a running copy of them in memory in order to, for example, snap an image off the DLL in memory after it got unpacked. Petro has a couple of tricks here on how to do it. You can run the DLL with a service host. Now, he mentions that you make an error message, but even with the error message, the DLL may still run. He also has an interesting Python script. This Python script can be used to inject the DLL into an already existing process like explorer.exe, something malware commonly does. So this trick can then be used to load the DLL in memory, get it to run, and then take the snapshot off the memory once the DLL is unpacked. Akamai offers an in-depth review of the XOR DDoS botnet. This botnet apparently is causing some major pain for some Akamai customers with its DDoS attacks exceeding 100 gigabits per second. Akamai is observing about 20 or so different DDoS attacks from this particular botnet a day against various targets, most of them in Asia. Now, the sad part about this botnet is that the way it infects the Linux servers is just the good old weak passwords for SSH. So the message still isn't getting through that you shouldn't use passwords to authenticate against Linux servers. Once on the system, the malware doesn't really make a big effort to hide itself. It does write random files into /boot, which really should stick out. Also, it does do a very old trick by adding directories to the dev directory, which of course has been done ever since Linux malware essentially started. Also, the network traffic being created by this malware is pretty easy to spot, and Akamai is offering some snort rules and even IP tables rules in order to detect and block that traffic. And James Forshaw with the Google project Zero found two vulnerabilities in TrueCrypt, which could lead to a privilege escalation, and with that potentially be used to implement backdoors in TrueCrypt. Now, TrueCrypt itself, of course, is no longer maintained and kind of an abandoned project at this point, but the findings are still interesting because a lot of effort was spent to actually audit the code of TrueCrypt, and these vulnerabilities were apparently missed. Just, well, telling you that these audits are hardly ever perfect. Now, there is a new project, Veracrypt, which sort of took over where TrueCrypt left, and they did implement a fix for these two vulnerabilities. And John Lambert at Microsoft published an interesting blog post entitled The Inside Story Behind MS-0867. It has some details about how Microsoft uses crash dumps being sent by users to find new vulnerabilities and exploits being used against these vulnerabilities. Now, in this particular case, they were able actually to spot that this vulnerability is being executed and exploited successfully, analyzing only 6 different crash dumps submitted. And at the time it was actually noticed, only 2 events had been recorded. And as John puts it in his blog post, it was the 45,000th most significant event. But interestingly, Microsoft was able to spot actual exploit code in the crash dump, which then of course increased the priority of this particular event. And last week at DerbyCon, two researchers did 10% about vulnerable devices that are visible to the internet, according to the Shodan search engine. They found a total of 68,000 such devices being exposed, which of course doesn't necessarily mean they're vulnerable, but many of these devices appear to run operating systems like Windows XP and such that are likely vulnerable. They also set up a number of honeypots, which apparently were attacked, and standard Linux exploits like the aforementioned weak SSH passwords were used in order to break into these devices. These devices did claim or make themselves look like defibrillators, so certainly devices that could be used to create some real harm. But it doesn't really look like the attackers actually knew that they actually had a device like this exploited. So, well, going back to the earlier story, they may as well have just used it for denial of service attacks. And this is it for today. Thanks again for listening, and talk to you again tomorrow. Bye.